better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
Hi, folks. This is Jack Spierko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. As always, one man's view of the changing world, the changing times, and the things we can all do to live a better life if times get tough or even if they don't. Today is August the 10th, 2016. This is episode 1846 of the Survival Podcast. And today I'm going to have on the air with us Jessica Mills. Jessica is a gal with a degree in biosystems engineering out of Auburn University. But that's really not what we're here to talk about. See, she came out of that with a minor in agrimony and soils and began a career with NRCS as an ag engineer. And after a few years of what she thought was a big opportunity, she was presented to the ability to go work for Halliburton in Colorado. And after a year and a half of being what she calls a prisoner in a big corporation, decided to reboot. And she did exactly what I did to reboot over 20 years ago. I did it myself, except she did more. I took a walk from Pennsylvania to New Hampshire. She took a walk on the same trail, but she started in Georgia and ended in Maine. That's right, she thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail. That's a tremendous accomplishment. It really is. She's here to talk to us today about lightweight backpacking, how that relates to things like your 72-hour bag or bug-out bag or whatever you want to call it. Those are her words, not mine. And rebooting in nature, which is exactly what I needed to do. I'm sure Jessica and I will have a lot to talk about today and a lot of stuff that will be interesting. Before we do that, let's go ahead and take care of our two sponsors of the day. Bob Wells Nursery has become my go-to for fruit trees, nut trees, and hard-to-find edibles. Their customer service is second to none, and they even provide a 10% discount for all MSB members. Check them out at bobwellsnursery.com today. You know, guys, I've been telling you about how Safe Castle Royal has everything for your prepping needs for over 7 years now. Everything's a big word, but in this case, it's true. Of course, they have long-term storage food, water purification equipment, shelters, solar and wind components, and more. But hey, did you know they even have an amazing fold-down bug-out bicycle? Yeah, they actually have two of those. For everything you could ever need as a prepper, and I do mean everything, check out safecastle.com today. With that knocked out, let's go ahead and take a look at the year that was the episode of the year, 1846, because the episode is 1846. Alex Shrugged at TSP Wiki has two up for us today. We have Nothing Plows Like a Deer, and we have Two Horses' Backsides Produce a Standard Gauge Rail. That's the one I'm going to read. Before I do that, in other news, kerosene is discovered while distilling coal. Until this time, whale oil had been used for clean-burning illumination or coal gas in the cities. Unfortunately, kerosene lighting is delayed due to the various patent lawsuits. Nothing like government to get in the way of shit, I'm just saying. Animal magnetism or mesmerism is offered as a medical treatment. It's hypnosis, people. The method will remain popular until more methodical systems are developed, such as psychotherapy. And the saxophone is patented in Belgium. Music has just become slow, sweet, and silly. A popular explosion is near at hand. All hail Adolphe Sax. I think saxophone music is some of the coolest music in the world when it's played by the right person the right way. Anyway, I will point out Nothing Runs Like a Deer does apply to John Deere. And in this year, John Deere, as a blacksmith, starts off making a plow that can handle the soils of the Midwest. But let's read Two Horses' Backsides Produce a Standard Gauge Rail, because some of you are going, what the hell does that all mean? Trains need a standard gauge. A wider gauge means more stability, but requires wider curves to safely turn and more work on the underlying base below the tracks. A narrower gauge allows for quicker turns in tight situations. This is why you see mining cars that look like toy trains at the park. Also, when a train follows a curve, a corner of the train cab always swings out beyond the rail. Too tight a curve means the corner swings out a lot. If a light pole is set too close to the tracks, it's toast. Standardization also makes expansion through acquisition easier. If I own a successful railway route and I want to expand, I can lay more track, or I can buy out my competitor on the same route and use their existing track for my own trains if they're using the same gauge. Different gauges mean work conveying the rails, time, and transferring cargo and passengers from one train to another. So what's the solution? Early trolleys were pulled by horse teams, usually two horses pulling side by side. Thus, the gauge rails were measured as the width across the backside of two horses, which is 4 feet, 8.5 inches. This becomes the standard gauge for train tracks. My take by Alex Shrugged. Hey, don't laugh. That is what the Romans did for chariots. Today there are different gauges in use and there are special needs, but generally speaking, standard gauge is the standard. FYI, Tom Clancy used Rage Gale as a plot element in his thriller Dead of Honor. I don't want to give anything away, but Japan uses a narrow gauge, 3'6" for their trains because of the tight corners the trains must make. My take by Alex Shark, just interesting stuff today. I mean, nothing earth-shattering or what have you, but I will point out that there are roads in Europe and paths in Europe that are still using the same width set by the Romans. So even though the Roman Empire fell, the width of a horse's ass still has an impact in today's world. As we look at the political landscape, maybe it's not horses' asses that have the impact anymore, possibly the back end of a jackass. I'm just saying. Anyway, with that, let's get into the main topic of today's show. And I want to say welcome to the Survival Podcast. Our special guest today, Jessica Mills. Hey, Jessica, welcome to the Survival Podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be on the show.
I'm glad to have you on the show. I mean, we're going to talk today about lightweight hiking, your experience through hiking the Appalachian Trail, and how that relates to things like 72-hour kits. And we're also going to talk about rebooting in nature. Now, I don't know if you've listened to my show, how much you've listened to my show or not. We share a commonality there. About 25 years ago, I got out of the Army and needed a reboot. And I didn't do what you did. I didn't hike Georgia to Maine. I hiked central Pennsylvania to New Hampshire. And I bet things are a little different today with the gear that's available. So I'm excited to have you on the show today. But before we get into all that, let's chat about kind of you, what your background, like what led you to this world? Like start out like when you're in school and you're going to figure out what you're going to do in the world. And next thing you know, you're, you know, this person that's through hiking the Appalachian Trail. How'd that happen?
Well, yeah, it was kind of a interesting path. I always wanted to hike the trail since I was like 5 years old. I mean, I remember being at Newfound Gap in North Carolina and seeing the sign and like kind of trying to spell out, you know, Appalachian Trail. And my mom read it to me and I was like, well, what does that mean? You know, I was like the kid that always asked a million questions. And she's like, well, you know, that's a path where people walk from Georgia to Maine. And I mean, it just blew my mind. And I was like, well, come on, let's go. You know, and she's like, we can't do that. And I'm like, well, let's do some, you know, and I was kind of like hoping she would want to keep going, you know, of course, in my mind at five, that made sense. But, yeah. So anyway, I knew then I was like, someday I'm going to do this. Like, cause you know, of course she was like, well, one day when you get older, you can do it. And so I was like, well, I will. And, but, you know, like any other dreams and goals, you kind of set them on the back burner. And so I had planned to after college do it. But anyway, I moved to Alabama when I was 14. I was actually born in Florida, but I moved here to take care of my grandparents and I actually came alone. And I mean, they couldn't drive or anything. So I grew up pretty fast. But then I started, you know, the whole college trap at Auburn University. And I went to school for biosystems engineering and with a minor in agronomy and soils. And I knew I wanted to do engineering, I guess, because I was good at science and math. And isn't that why anyone ever wants to be an engineer? But so I decided that and I'd started like electrical, but then I found out, hey, I could be involved in like agricultural studies with engineering. And so I just thought that was, you know, pretty cool. So I did that, and after I graduated, I started working with NRCS, actually, and I know you've had, you know, several people on the show. I actually know Frank Cochran.
Oh, cool.
So, but anyhow, I worked for them, and then I was just like, man, I feel, like, trapped, you know, like, I'm in this great job, one that I should retire from, but it just didn't feel like enough, you know, and I got the opportunity to move out west, to work in the oil field, actually with Halliburton, which was kind of a disaster. But anyway, so while I was out there, you know, I just, same thing. You know, I was like, I'm not happy with this job. And I've been listening to your podcast since I was in college. So I was like, you know, man, he's really speaking to me with the stuff he talks about. And then I was at a work dinner one night, sitting there with coworkers and stuff. And this fella came to the end of the table. He was looking to move to the area and he was like, what do you like about the Denver area? And I was like, well, I really like hiking. I don't know if you do or not. And he was like, oh, I love to hike. Have you ever heard of the Appalachian Trail? And I was like, are you kidding me? I've been wanting to do that since I was little. I have a map in my office, and like in any, you know, office I've ever had, I've had this map. And he was like, well, I hiked it last year. And it was just like a no-brainer for me at that point. I was like, I'm about to quit my job and hike the Appalachian Trail. And that's exactly what I did. So
That's awesome.
I needed a reboot, and it was time to happen. So, so yeah, kind of a long, convoluted path, but
yeah, but you did it, and that's it. Like I said, that's an achievement. Very few people, actually, if we looked at a percentage, I think we're well under 1% of the population has through hiked the AT, or even any. If we included all trails of similar distances, I think we'd still be well under 1%. So that's awesome. But let's kind of talk about kind of prepping leading up to it. I mean, when I did it, I really had no idea what the hell I was doing. I was just out of the Army, and I had driven up to North Conroy, New Hampshire, which is where the White Mountains are. And
yes.
I talked to some people up there, and I'm like, yeah, before I move to Texas, I'm going to come back, and I'm going to walk up here. And they laughed and all, and I went home.
Yeah, people laugh.
Yeah, I went home, and yeah, there were people that live there. I see people do it all the time, and they're still laughing. I'm like, I'm freaking Army Airborne, man. I walked down a road, you know. So I really didn't know what I was doing. I kind of figured out as I went. I had kind of crappy gear. There was no such thing as really true lightweight gear. This is, again, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And I had money coming in, so I did a whole lot of the kind of walking to town or hitchhiking to town and staying in a hotel here and there because I took what's called terminal leave. So, like, when I got out of the Army, I actually had, like, 65 days of leave. So I just left early and got paid for 5 days. So that was a great way to be able to, you know, be able to afford a hotel room or whatever. So what was it like for you when you're figuring out how to do this, the whole thing?
Well, I mean, I had never been on an overnight backpacking trip the day I stepped foot on the trail. So the first overnight backpacking trip I've ever done is Appalachian Trail. But I was kind of in a similar situation is what you're talking about. You know, it's just like, what do I do? Like, what do I, you know, I mean, I've decided it and I said it to myself, I'm about to hike the Appalachian Trail. Now, you know, it was just, it was overwhelming because there's so much information out there. And, you know, there's like whiteblaze.net. I don't know if you've ever been on there, but people argue with each other and call each other stupid because one prefers another water filter over the other and, you know, things like that. And it's like, you know, it's just, you can read one thing and then
I'm going there right now. I got to see this.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, there are different, any topic, you know, some people just argue to the death over what's the best. And it's like, oh man, you know, it's what works for you. So of course I was on a budget because, I mean, you're going to be 6 months without a job, and it wasn't like I had any gear at all. So I just started sifting through the information and everything, and I mean, it was hard, but I read a lot of I mean, thank God we have the internet now, you know, and I was able to get on there and search. So I can't imagine for you how hard that would have been.
There was nothing.
Yeah.
There was nothing. You could go to the store and buy a book written by a guy who never did it.
Yeah.
That was you know, and telling you to buy gear they haven't made for 10 years. That's
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I've seen a couple of pictures that you've posted before, you know, about being on the trail and how it changed you, you know, and your perspective and stuff. So, but yeah, it is an overwhelming thing, and that's something that I think all people, when they go, okay, I'm about to do this, they face that. It's like, what's next? You know, you just do it a piece at a time.
And kind of one of the things we wanted to talk about today is how that relates to people with, like, you know, the 72-hour kits and stuff like that.
Yeah. So one thing I noticed when I first got out there was there were people who didn't do much research at all. And they were out there basically testing what they were calling, you know, their bug-out bag. And, I mean, three Rambo knives with, you know, this heavyweight, like, Army, you know, gear. And it's just like, you don't need that. You know, you don't need three Rambo knives. And so when you get to your first stop, there's an outfitter that'll do a free gear and pack shakedown for you. And I saw people coming in there with like 80-pound packs, you know, and just like things that they don't need. And so, you know, I think when people start looking into 72-hour bags or bug-out bags, you know, it's like all this like tactical stuff. But I mean, if you're into backpacking, you really have it all figured out right there, you know? And, I started realizing that and I was like, man, I've built everything I need because, you know, I went up to 7 days with just what was in my pack, you know, and my pack, at the heaviest was, like 38 pounds, but that was 6 days of food and 2 liters of water, which was not necessary. So, I finally got it down to under 30 pounds, you know, and, but I mean, it's got, you know, you've got a water filter or some kind of water treatment system. You've got shelter, you've got bedding, you've got a change of clothes, you know, just really all of the necessities that you have to have right there in that bag.
I mean, I kind of look back and I wonder if you've run into people that did this. If I went to do that again, I would be really tempted to rely on the hammock tent systems because they're so light, because they're so flexible, because you can set them up like that.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter what the ground's like. Did you see a lot of people using those or?
Not a whole lot. I saw like, you know, backpacking hammocks and then backpacking tents, you know, but there are some people that, you know, used, different things like that. And they actually have tents now that are made out of like Cuban fiber and you can set it up using a trekking pole.
Cool.
So it's like, you know, your trekking pole becomes multi-purpose and Cuban fiber is like really light. And that's one thing you learn out there. You want most of your stuff to have like some kind of redundancy. If like your trekking pole, you know, also used as a pole for your tent or, like baby powder, you know, I'm a girl. So I was like, I can't stand the way I smell, you know, but it's also good for like chafing, you know? And,
yeah.
So, I mean, you just try to make sure that you actually need the stuff that you have in there. And so, you know, it's, if you're going to be actually leaving your home or, you know, bugging out, whatever you want to call it, you actually need to be able to walk with something on your back and not be absolutely miserable. So I would just suggest, you know, for people to kind of look into the backpacking gear when you're building that kit.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that people need to kind of differentiate between, like, this is gear for when I have to go mobile on foot, and then this is, like, all the extra nice to have stuff that can go in the trunk of a car.
Yes.
And then make sure that you're not messing up which goes where you're taking stuff that you really should have in your mobile gear and putting it in your trunk and stuff that really should be in your trunk and putting it with kind of that mobile gear, because I think a lot of people do that. And guys, especially, we want all our bullets and grenades and our rocket launchers and all that stuff. But, you know, you have to think about like kind of the reality on the ground. I don't even think about that much with, you know, gun gear because I every day carry a sidearm. So that's not really part of the pack thing. Maybe an extra mag or something, but, you know, how much does that add? Not a lot. But then, like you're saying, you start to actually, when you really start to wear out, you start looking at ounces.
Yes.
If you can take 4 ounces here, 3 ounces there, 2 ounces, that's 3/4 of a pound.
Yep.
You know, and that's a lot on a day, after another day, after another day.
Yep. Yep. You learn real quick, you know, what's a necessity when you're carrying it on your back, for sure.
What were some of the biggest things you gained by being on the trail, and kind of how long did the hike actually take you?
It took me a little over 6 months. I kind of took my sweet time, and I was actually able to enjoy the Pennsylvania Dutch culture.
Cool.
Because one of the guys, he actually wrote into you that I hiked with, but he's from Pennsylvania, just somebody I met along the way because, you know, I started alone, but you make friends out there. And But he was from there, so he housed several of us at his parents, like, while we were there. So I got to try, like, chew fly pie and scrapple and ham loaf and, like, all this stuff. And I'm just like, man, we are missing stuff in the South, you know? it changed my perspective on a lot. I mean, confidence, you know, it's kind of given me this, like, I can do anything now mindset, you know, anything I put my mind to, I can make it happen, you know, and so that definitely, also you learn to, like, live without this need for instant gratification, you know, because that doesn't exist. Like, out there, you're working hard. Yeah, sure. Each day you might have a pretty summit or something like that, but you're out there, you know, busting your butt for 6 months for one goal, you know, and so it just kind of teaches you to, like, exercise, like, diligence, you know. And then just appreciate, like, simplicity of life. I mean, when I got home, I started, like, throwing out just everything. I was like, for 6 months, I had everything I needed on my back. Like, I don't need this crap anymore. You know? I don't need this stuff. So just it humbles you, you know. I mean, there were times that I did like a work for stay to save money, you know, and slept on a floor. And I was just grateful to have the floor of an inside building to sleep on, you know, or sleeping outside. There's a restaurant.
Freaking barn. Yeah. I
mean. Yeah. Yeah. Anywhere, you know.
I have a roof.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, it's like roaches are not trying to fly on my headlamp while I'm cooking my dinner tonight. You know, it's great.
That was a bit more of the southern part of the trail. That's
yeah, that was in Virginia, and I I'm not really afraid of a whole lot, you know, and yeah. I just have never loved roaches though. But I had one fly in my tent, and I was like, without missing a beat, I grabbed him and just like threw him out, and I was like, I just grabbed a cockroach with my hand, you know. I was like, all right, and then like 2 seconds later, he like flew on my face, you know, because the light just attracts bugs while you're laying there trying to cook your dinner, you know. But so, you know, I don't know. Just, yeah, appreciate the inside. Whenever it rains now, a lot of times I look and I'm like, wow, I'm really glad I can just go inside. And I like using an umbrella or a raincoat now to walk from the car to inside of a store, I would just laugh. I'd be like, really, you know. But I don't know. It really kind of restored, not to be cheesy, but restored my faith in humanity, because there's such an amazing culture on the Appalachian Trail. I mean, there are people who are so selfless, and they're called trail angels, and they do trail magic. And they'll come out. It could be anything from a cooler on the side of the road with Cokes in it or beer, you know, or it could be like there are these people from Wisconsin that come on Easter every year to a place in Georgia, and they camp, and they're all like physically disabled somehow, so they can't hike, but they want to support the people doing. They cook out all weekend long, and they invite you to camp out there all weekend if you want to, and eat, you know, eat everything they have to cook. I mean, people invited me into their home to stay the night just to give me a place to sleep and do laundry and shower. I mean, it's just amazing how people are so kind out there, you know. And hitchhiking, I mean, I didn't shuttle. Shuttles cost money.
Yeah.
So hitchhiking, yeah. And just, I don't know, just seeing that there are actually really good people who want to support folks and chasing their dreams, you know. So.
Yeah, I'll tell you what got me a couple times that I hitchhiked, some on the trail, and like one time was with a car that ran out of gas, and me and a buddy are walking down this road off the highway several miles carrying a gas can. Well, if you pass people doing that, you know what happened.
Yeah.
Some of the people that would stop and you'd have a conversation with them would not be the people you'd expect. So in that particular instance, the guy that stopped, and this will probably mean nothing to you, but, you know, we're talking to the guy and we say, you know, what's your name? And his name was Tom Gears. Well, Gears Dairy is like one of the biggest businesses in that part of rural Pennsylvania. Wow. He was the owner of Gears Dairy. The guy was worth about $12 million.
Oh, my God.
And of all the people that drove by us, he was the one that stopped and picked, you know, two kind of shady looking young, you know, 20 something guys with shabby beards up off the side of the road. And I noticed that too sometimes when you'd get a ride from someone, if you were going into town off the trail or something, some of the people would pick you up. You would kind of expect it would be the people that, I don't know, maybe were more blue collar, I guess, you know, and I'm not saying that never happened, but I'm saying some of the people that picked us up were, you know, people that, you know, own car dealerships and things like that.
Yeah.
And it does change your perspective on people. Because I grew up rural PA and all rich people were, you know, greedy and what have you. You know, that was probably part of how I got over that, is seeing that people are people.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, and I think a lot of those people who are so caught up, you know, I mean, not like, you know, like you said, owning a car dealership, I mean, that's got to be a pretty big responsibility. It's not like they can just step away for 6 months to do something like that. And a lot of them want to, you know, and they, because they can't, or they don't, or, you know, they didn't make those opportunities for themselves, like, you know, things like that. They want to support somebody else who's doing it, or want to help somebody else who, you know, and I saw a lot of that. I really did. So there's a great community out there. It's pretty awesome.
How much time did you actually spend alone hiking? I've noticed a lot of your videos, there were, you know, different groups of people kind of merging in and out. Did you spend much time truly alone?
I did towards the end. So at the beginning, you know, at Springer Mountain, I mean, there are like a lot of people. You know, everybody's going to hike the Appalachian Trail. And then, you know, by Virginia, a lot of them have started dropping like flies. Either they, you know, didn't budget properly, or got injured or just decided it wasn't for them or whatever. And you start, you're like, who's next? You know,
yeah.
who's next? And then, so at the beginning, you know, I was like, I want to hike this trail to be alone with myself, you know, to not find myself, but maybe, you know, or just think about life or what am I doing, you know? And, so I expected that, but at the beginning it was not that at all. And I'm kind of glad it wasn't, I didn't know much about backpacking, right? So it was nice having other people there who maybe were more experienced or just somebody to talk to. And, but by, I don't know, the halfway point, it really had kind of thinned out. And then I ended up in the back of the hiker bubble, they call it, because I had to go home twice, once for my brother's high school graduation, and then once for actually my dog got sick and ended up passing away. It was awful. But so I ended up going back. So the bubble and the group I was with had gotten ahead, and I was kind of towards the end and cutting it close to the deadline to finish. But so once I got back, it was kind of a ghost town. And I was alone a good bit. And it was hard at first. I mean, your mind is a lot noisier of a place than you think.
Yeah.
You know, once you're alone and there are no distractions, there's no Facebook, there are no, you know, hey, let's call a friend. Because a lot of times in Maine, you don't get real good phone signal. And plus, you're kind of conserving your battery. But I listen to the survival podcast a lot.
Awesome. I was in your head.
Yeah.
No wonder you can find silence.
No, it was really helpful. And that's kind of while I was listening to that, you know, I was trying to figure out like, what am I going to do after I get done hiking? And you think you're going to think about that all 6 months, but you try to avoid that at all costs. And, so at the end, I kind of got to think about that stuff a little bit more, but it gets kind of scary in Maine, being alone there. Are like river fords, you know, in Georgia through New Hampshire, they believe in footbridges.
Yeah.
But once you get to Maine, they're like, oh, you got it now.
That's why I quit. All right.
So it gets a little weird. And we got what we called the Maine soon. At that time, there was just a lot of rain. So it got a little scary, but yeah.
That answers some questions for me because I was watching some of your videos and going, I never saw groups that large.
Yeah, yeah.
But by starting in Pennsylvania, and probably an odd time too, it was like July.
Yeah.
It was like right around, actually it was the end of June, right? And starting in Pennsylvania at the end of June, I think that's kind of probably not where that bubble you're talking about is. You do learn things though, like sometimes you're not so nice a person because you do a fly dump, you know, where you've got the black fly chasing you and somebody's coming the other way and you stop and talk to them and you slink away and you dip that fly on them because that fly's been chasing you for like a mile and a half.
Yes.
You know, I mean, and you can always tell somebody that's not been on the trail because they have no idea that's what you're doing to them.
Yeah,
like,
That's one
of those things that so few people would ever understand.
Yes, that, and they smell good. You can tell.
Yeah. So the fly's going to go, man. That's the other thing, too, that. Because people think flies like stink. When you smell like aqua velva, man, that fly is on you hard, you know?
Yes.
So I always love that. You see a guy, you know, and he's all decked out, look all shiny and new, and he just comes from, hey, what are you doing? Yeah, I'm hiking. How's it? That's pretty nice. Yeah, it's wonderful down there. Hey, take a look at that. And then you're gone. And then the fly's just on his ass, man.
Yeah. Things like that. And we also used to enjoy, like, mosquito massacres. That's, like, where you stand real still, and you let them, like a bunch of them land on you, and then you just start smacking all of them, you know, at once. So that way you get multiple ones.
Multiple kills.
Yeah. But yeah, that's another thing I noticed after hiking. At first, when I got back, or if I would even go into town, my sense of smell was like so sensitive. Like, I actually went to DC for the 4th of July because I was hiking with a girl that knew somebody there, so we could just stay with them. And I was standing there watching the fireworks, and I mean, just the perfume and the herbal essences and the deodorant, and I mean, it was just like so overwhelming. It's crazy how, like, I don't know, numb we get to that.
You're desensitized.
Yeah.
Is. When I was in the military and we'd go out on a field exercise, and once you're out there for like a week, and they send guys out to like harass you and all, like they call the Op 4.
Yeah.
And they can't get near you. You could smell them from freaking a half a mile away.
Yes.
Because they're clean. And you think you're the one that they would smell because you stink.
Yeah.
I guess if you're in like a powder room or something, you'd come off stinking. But in the jungle, you're the woods, you smell like the jungle or the woods.
Yeah.
And then you smell like nature and all this other stuff stinks.
Yes.
To you, you know?
Yes. And also like makeup, you know, cause I kind of wore makeup before the, you know, before the trail, and now I barely do ever, but that's one thing I noticed. I started seeing girls with makeup, and you know, you always hear guys say, oh, you're prettier without makeup on, and you're like, yeah, right. But I think that's like the caveman existing in them, because I started looking at people and I'm like, I don't know if you've seen the Hunger Games, but I was like, these people look like folks from the Capitol, you know, like just all of this painted on stuff. I don't know. It's weird how like in sync you get with nature.
I know what you're talking about, because it wasn't the first one. It was like one of them. And the only reason I saw it is I was on an airplane, and it was like the only thing on the like select your movie that looked interesting. It was like the third or middle or I don't know.
Yeah.
But I know what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. You know. You realize the hypocrisy too. Like, remember the remake of Red Dawn? And like they're fighting this guerrilla war, and the guy's got like gel in his hair and shit. You're like, wait a minute, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
This stuff really works.
Yeah, something does not compute here.
Yeah, I mean, that is I think what you're saying, and what I got out of is you get really back in touch with your humanity again. I mean, part of why I did it, you've listened to Social, you may have heard this, but when I first got back, I went out and hung out with a bunch of guys I went to high school with. And we went out to this place, and we used to drink beer and chase girls and stuff like that, and swim. And we're sitting there drinking beer, and they're just talking about, to me, it was just bullshit. So I just take like two beers, and I walked away for like 15 minutes. And I just sat by myself, kind of looking at the water and the stars. And then I came back over. That was the whole thing. And you would have thought I threw a booger on somebody. Like, that was unacceptable behavior. And I'm like, okay, I got to figure shit out before I go on with my life, because something's different here. And I think part of it was figuring out, well, you are.
Yeah.
You know, you are. And you can't just ram yourself back in where people you grew up with haven't changed at all.
Yes. Yes.
Because they're still, you know, they were still in high school in their head.
Yeah.
They were 4 years out, but in their head, they were still worried about the crap that high school kids worry about. And I didn't know what to be worried about, except what the hell am I going to do with my life? And it sounds like that's part of what you were looking for. Like, okay, this isn't working. I put all this time and effort into these degrees and getting this job, and this wasn't working for me. I'm not happy. So I'm going to go take this dream and make it a reality and then try to figure out what's next.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. I mean, it just, you know, I realized, I'm like, yeah, I'm not cut out for an 8-to-5. Like, I just can't do it. You know, and it's not laziness. Like, I am a very driven person, you know, and I have goals and passions. And that's one thing I noticed, you know, in a lot of the jobs I've had is that, I don't know, the stuff like people talk about, they talk about watching TV, and that's, you know, basically like it. And I don't even watch TV like at all. I enjoy living under my little rock. You know, I will have a record player, you know, an 8-track tape player. And I enjoy those things, you know, I'm kind of like old school, but, they just didn't have like a drive or a passion or a, you know, I don't know. And it's almost like people talk about the zombie apocalypse, and it's like, we're in it. All these people walking around
everywhere.
Yeah. With no life or light in their eyes. They're just like zombies, you know? I don't know. And every now and then you'll meet somebody else, or you'll see somebody else that has this light in their eye too. And you're like, oh yes, you're alive, you know? So, and out on the Appalachian Trail, it was like everybody was alive pretty much, you know? So it was great. But yeah, that's what I did. I was like, enough of this. Something has to change. You know, I don't want to wait till retirement to live. I want to live.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's
I bet you this. I'm going out on a limb here, but I'm kind of betting when you get a new job, it's exciting, it's interesting, you're really into it, and then once you get to the point where you can do it competently and you've reached the invisible ceiling at that level to where now that's what you do, then you're bored as shit.
Yes.
That's people with that attitude, that's what happens. It's not that they're not good at a job. They become unemployable because a regular job has a limit to what you're allowed to do. And once you've developed a competency in everything you're allowed to do in that job, then you might as well be putting tacos together at Taco Bell. Because it doesn't matter how advanced it is or whatever. To you, it's boring and mundane bullshit.
Yep. Yep. It is. Exactly.
So what the hell are you going to do now?
So while I was hiking, I started a YouTube channel before I left, which I had never really spent a whole lot of time on YouTube, but I was like, oh, I'm going to document this hike. And so I started a blog, and then I started the vlog, and, you know, documented it and everything. And really, I was surprised at how many people started following or wanted to watch, or, you know, people were like, wow, that you're, you know, this is inspirational. And I'm like, what? You know, and they're like, yeah, you know, just seeing somebody say, forget it, like, I'm going to live my dream. And then I was like, well, that's what people should do, you know? And so I was listening to your podcast a lot and started learning about microgreens. And so when I got home, I started myself a little microgreens business. I live in my grandparents' old mill house, so I called it Mill House Microgreens because, you know, I grow them here in the little mill house. So I've been doing, like, farmers markets, and I've been doing selling to a couple of restaurants. And so I kind of come to a fork in the road where I've, you know, I'm 30. I'm not married, don't have any kids, you know, unattached. And so I'm like, you know, I could, like, pick a spot on the map and settle there and, you know, whatever, but I'm kind of like, why? So I'm actually hoping that I'm going to be able to do the Pacific Crest Trail next year. And in that instance, you know, I'll kind of just keep where I'm at with the microgreens. But I'm also, in addition to the YouTube channel, I write for the local paper a little bit. And I have been doing, like, insurance inspections, which I can tell them, hey, next week I want to work Wednesday and Friday and Saturday, you know, and I can go do it. So I really have complete control of my schedule now, and it's amazing. You know, it's really nice. I mean, by no means am I banking, but, you know, I'm getting by, and the freedom is just so much more enjoyable.
So you have this big highfalutin engineering that you're not using. Do people think you're crazy for that?
Yes. Yes. And people ask me all the time, so are you going to be an engineer again? Kind of like with this judgmental tone, like, what are you doing with your life, you know? And I'm like, maybe, you know, I don't know. I could, you know, I have that there. And actually, I've got a friend that had called me when I came back here to Alabama and was like, hey, we've got a job, you know, here at the Department of Environmental Management, you know, if you want it. And I was like, working for the NRCS, I mean, it was great, but I don't know, something about me just doesn't want to work for the government. I just can't do it anymore.
No.
Yeah. I know, right? It's like, I just can't. It's not for me anymore. So, I mean, that is an option though. You know, it is nice to have things to fall back on, I guess. But honestly, I don't really want to do that anymore. I've got to do my own thing, and I'm still not, you know, I can't say the Appalachian Trail completely, you know, gave me the, you know, oh, magical, this is the answer. But, I mean, if I'm able to, you know, continue what I'm doing and do the Pacific Crest Trail and then the Continental Divide Trail, then I'll be a triple crowner and, you know, I don't know, just kind of enjoy life and make it work for me to where I can.
So. Well, I think that's what everybody really wants to do, is figure out how to enjoy their life and make it work, right?
Yeah.
So I think that we've been lulled into this belief that, well, if you go get a job, then everything will be okay. But I don't know if you look at, like high suicide rates once people are over 20 years old, most of those people are employed in a regular job, right?
Yep.
Or if you look at alcoholism rates, right? It's not, I mean, yeah, there's the street bum or whatever that it's on alcohol to survive or whatever. But in general, like, all these people that have the American dream have all these problems. They're the ones with high cholesterol, right? They're the ones with high blood pressure. They're the ones that are addicted to cigarettes and alcohol. And I'm not saying everybody with a job is, but I'm saying, like, having that type of a life does not guarantee you, you know, health, peace, and prosperity until you're 90 years old and quietly die the death with angels singing around you or something like that. And you would think that it does, based on how important it seems to people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're so, like, attached. It's like an umbilical cord, you know what I mean? They're like attached to this lifeline. And it, you know, I hear people all the time, like, how did you do that? I couldn't just quit my job. And I'm like, why? Well,
is there a guy with a gun at the front door that doesn't let you out, or, you know?
Exactly. It's like, you can. You're afraid to, you know? I mean, if you want to do anything, you can make it happen. You just have to do it, and, you know, stop lying to yourself and saying, like, oh, well, if I work really hard, you know, I can enjoy it when I retire, you know, enjoy life when I retire. Like, that's a sucky plan. Like, that's horrible, you know? And, yeah, so, I mean, yeah, people think I'm crazy, but I love what I'm doing now, you know, and I'm, if I can make the PCT happen next year, I'll really love it. So, I don't know. People think that, I don't know. Yeah, they're so dependent upon that job. And it's like, especially nowadays, I mean, you can lose that job real quick. You know, there's not loyalty like there used to be.
Seems like there's going to be more and more opportunities to earn money seasonally when you want to work, things like that. If you look at things like Uber, right, or what Amazon's doing, that's like, they're, I don't know if you know, even know what they're doing. The other thing is, it's like Uber, but it's for packages. So you sign up with Amazon if they have it in your area yet, and basically you decide when you want to work, and you get a certain number, and it's like the stuff where you get it in the same day you order it.
Huh.
And these people are just, they get a route on their phone, they go into Amazon, I think they have to give them a background check, but they're contractors. If they don't want to work a certain day, they don't get fired. You know, somebody else. Now, if you don't work consistently, I imagine other drivers get the better routes, but
right. You
work as you want, and then you can say, okay, I'm going to go do this for 6 months, and then when you come back, it's not like, oh, you suck, you're not allowed back.
Yeah.
Or if you're in another town, as long as, and I think their plan is to roll it out, like, in every major market. That's, it's like they're trying to own the world or something, you know, and take over for the post office.
Yeah.
You know, they're kind of that final link. And that type of thing, I think you'll only see more and more of that because no one wants the burden of an employee. So kind of this somewhat transient lifestyle for the right people, I think, is a pretty viable solution in today's.
Absolutely. And I mean, then you can, you know, save up and go, you know, if you enjoy traveling or just take off some time, you know, a staycation, whatever, you know, that's kind of what I'm doing. You know, I've got the insurance deal, and I mean, they don't make me work, you know, it's just as I want to. And then, I'm also substitute teaching some, which is very interesting. And, you know, hearing all of the things you've done with education, it's like, I see it. I mean, I just see it right in my face with those kids. And, you know, I subbed for somebody last year, and they were 11th graders, and like all in the hallways, they have plastered, like, what college will you go to? You know, and then they have a board like showing pictures of students who have already committed to going to certain colleges. And it's just like, oh my God, you know? This particular class, this assignment was, write about what you're going to do after graduation. Option A, join the military. Option B, what college are you going to? And I was like,
What about
CD, FG, yeah.
Right?
So I asked the class, I was like, guys, is anybody planning on not going to college and, you know, not being in the military? And like very hesitantly, this one boy raised his hand and kind of looked around, you know, and everyone was like, oh, you're going to be saying, you know, would you like fries with that? And I was oh, goodness, you know, and so I just kind of gave him a talking to, you know, and I'm like, there are a lot of things that you can do other than work at McDonald's. Now, if that's what you decide to do, then, you know, that's you, but... But anyway, this particular boy, he's planning on taking over his father's plumbing business, you know, and it's like, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. One of those collegeites will be coming to him and begging for a job 5 years from
now. Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, what's bad is like, my mindset has evolved so much because I remember being in high school and I mean, I was the salutatorian, you know, and I had straight A's and was in every club and this and that. And you know, I'm like, gosh, I'm such an idiot. You know, I mean, not that doing well in school is bad, but it's just, I don't know, it didn't really matter, you know? And I would like kind of, I don't want to say I was judgmental of people who weren't planning on going to college, but maybe, you know, a little bit, I'm like, well, what's he going to do? And I had the same mindset, but that's what
you're taught.
That's what you're taught,
think, though.
That's what you're taught. Exactly. Brainwashed into you, you know? So yeah, I'm really glad that I don't think that way anymore, but.
Well, that's, I got some feedback there. Anyway, that's I think becoming more and more the case with people, especially how old, no offense, but how old are you?
I'm 30.
Okay, 30. Yeah. So you're right in that kind of age range where people are really starting to figure out that, hey, people like in Jack's generation and older, the world they came into when they came out of school, whether it be high school, military service, college, that's not the world we come into.
The
advice that we're getting from these people that are from the baby boom generations and the Gen Xers doesn't apply to us because they still think they're living in the same world because they're finishing out their careers and the jobs that are left. There's no room for us, right? So they're still telling us to do the same shit they did, but that doesn't work anymore.
No, it doesn't, you know, and it's funny because my parents, you know, encouraged me to go to college, and I've got four siblings that are younger and coming up behind me, and You know, two of them are planning to be engineers, one a pharmacist, and actually the youngest, I think, is like, I'm not going to college. And I told her, I was like, well, if you're not sure of what you want to do, I was like, go travel, go somewhere, you know, I mean, work a little while, like, learn what you like, learn a skill, you know, just figure it out, figure yourself out. Like, don't go and get suddenly into thousands of dollars of debt, you know, just because you had to throw a dart at something and go with it, you know.
Pickup truck and one of those teardrop trailers and just, you know.
Exactly.
Float around for a little while.
I wish that I had done that, you know. Oh, I wish that I had, but I didn't. And, you know, but yeah, my mom, you know, she's one of the, I won't use the self-checkout at Walmart because it takes jobs away. And I'm just like, oh, you're, it's going to happen anyway, you know. But I try to point things out to her. You know, I've heard you talk about, like, at Applebee's, you know, like, order your next drink. And you're like, yeah, your server is training you to use her replacement kind of thing.
They are.
And I know.
Clue. That's the thing. Like, they're all happy about it. Like, you know, it's like you don't even – well, maybe they do because hopefully – and I don't mean to put him down. Hopefully if your job is waitress at Applebee's, you're not done. Right.
Yeah.
You're not planning on staying there. And the danger is when that type of position goes away is, okay, where's the entry point now?
Yeah.
Where's that starting job, so to speak, for people to kind of step up? But it is going to go away. And this, you know, I'm not going to use it because it takes jobs away. It's like we are in this complete mass delusion that this is the way things are supposed to be, that people are really supposed to get out of bed in the morning, go to a place they don't want to be treated poorly, because people that do that kind of job, they're generally not treated very well by management, because management has to drive them to get a certain productivity, or, you know, it's not intentional. It's just the way the system is designed. And to deal with people all day long, moving objects across a freaking scanner, putting them in a bag for 8 hours and then go home and then barely have enough money to pay for the home. Like, that's not how human beings are supposed to live. And we are now at, like, we're protecting an unnatural state. We're getting protectionist around it. Like, we need to make sure this all stays this way.
Yeah.
Why the hell would we want it to who really wants to do that?
Exactly.
Now, I've been in points in my life where I needed a job and I'd do whatever it took so I'd want the job, but I didn't really want to do the job. I just needed money.
Exactly. And that's why when people are like, oh, you're going to be an engineer again, I'm like, maybe, but it'd only be if I have to, you know? It definitely won't be like, yes, I can't wait to go make money for somebody else again. You know, it's just, that's not my end goal in life at all. So, and that's another thing is
pretty big opportunity in regenerative agriculture for people that are entrepreneurs. I'm just saying, you know, I mean,
yeah,
there is all that too for you.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's kind of why I started, you know, getting my foot in the door a little bit with the microgreens, you know, and I've really enjoyed that. And if nothing else, like learning how to start a business, you know, I had no clue whatsoever. I mean, how to do that. And I'm like, if I'm able to do that, anybody can do it. And now it's not making me a ton of money, but I haven't been really pushing it because, like I said, I've come to a point now where I'm like, okay, I need to either decide, am I going to really push this and stay here and, you know, make this business what it should be, or am I going to really try to hike the Pacific Crest Trail? And so I think I'm leaning towards that, but I'm, and I'm still continuing it, but there's definitely, you know, a way to make money with that if there's a market for it in your area. And, I mean, I wouldn't say go quit your job tomorrow and start your microgreens business.
Yeah.
But I definitely have not lost any money on it. I've made money, you know. Now, is it worth my time right now to do that, like, full time? No, I couldn't do that full time right now. But I've made contacts, you know, and it's something that I can come back and do again, you know, when I get done gallivanting again, if I choose to. But and
I think
it's
the key, though, is you've learned the operations and the business mindset.
Yes.
Like that's the most valuable thing, because that is transferable to any business that you ever develop.
Yes. And I'm not scared now to start a business. You know, it's like, okay, I can do this. You know, and I mean, there is a lot into it. It's not like it's super easy, you know, but it's also not as bad as I thought it was going to be. Like, I was so intimidated, you know, like, oh, I can't do that. You know, yes, I can. Why can't I? So
the reason I love that as a starter business is it gives you every level of business ownership that's necessary to be able to run a business. You have to learn how to cold call.
You have to learn how to do customer service. You have to learn how to do collections when people don't pay. So, like, people think it's all about growing the product. Well, that's just one piece of it. But then you also have to manage inventory and manage outflows. You're managing an inventory that is, you know, something that will decay in time. It has to be moved. It's not like you're managing an inventory of silver coins that they can sit there for 10 years and they're still silver coins. So you have to balance everything. And if you can do that, then you can just kind of pick and choose, maybe while you're walking a giant long trail, what do I want to do next? And then think of how those pieces fit together.
Right.
And how that same mindset applies. And then you also see all the strengths and weaknesses of a business because you have something to compare it to.
Right.
You know, it's like they say, when you get bees, never get a hive.
Yeah.
Because you're not a beekeeper and you don't know jack crap. So you're looking at one hive going, they look happy.
Yeah.
They look pretty good. They're putting stuff in the combs. That's good. You know, but you have nothing to be able to look and go, okay, these guys are kicking ass. And that means that if this is an A, this is like a B, right, or a C plus. And now I need to figure out what's wrong with this hive to get it up to performing like this hive over here, where once you've run a business, you can do the same thing. You can say, without even running a new business, you can analyze it and say, well, this is what collections will be like in that. This is time to payment, and therefore the cash flow is better in this than that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just something to, like, compare it to. You know, you have some kind of comparison. And I like the bee example because, I mean, I don't have bees myself, but I've, you know, seen other people's hives and talked to them about it. But it's like, it's amazing how two hives right next to each other, one can be doing, you know, this way and the other one is going the complete other way, you know, and it's like, what? Like, so yeah, that's true. It's very true.
So, in all the time you spent on the trail, what was the best part of it as far as you were concerned?
Oh, man. Like, the best part, like, the actual section of trail, or do you mean, like, just personally and how I felt about it?
Let's say both.
Okay. So, I really liked... I really like Vermont. It's a beautiful state, and it's not as challenging as Maine and New Hampshire. So it's very, very beautiful, and you still get, you know, high peaks and things like that, but it's just not like the White Mountains where, you know, I went from 2 miles per hour easy, like that was my just regular pace, to like a half a mile per hour in the White Mountains. So, and then the best part of... for like me and my experience was the people. I mean, the people that I met and I hiked with, the people that I met while hitchhiking, you know, the people at the hostels and the towns, you know, just meeting people that have so many different beliefs and opinions and experiences. And the thing is, you're not meeting like a stereotypical person on the trail. I knew a family of five that were hiking together, and the youngest was 9 when she started, and she turned 10 on the trail, and they did the whole shebang.
Wow.
And then I also met like a 72-year-old woman that was hiking with her daughter. You know, so everyone's like, "Oh, am I too old to do the trail?" No, you're not. You know, you can do it if you want to do it. So
you can fog a mirror. You're not done yet.
Exactly. So I think that definitely was it. And honestly, like the little community that has been created with my YouTube channel is just amazing. I mean, they are so encouraging, you know, and I don't know how many times I had a tough day and like somebody on there, you know, just like reading the comments and stuff. I was like, yes, this is, you know, this helps. It just kind of keeps you going.
It is interesting to listen to the difference though in the world that the hiking, because when I was on the trail, there was no internet.
Yeah.
There was no, like, the people that had cell phones, they were the big bricks that you kept in a bag in your car, right? So, like, there was, like, no contact. So, like, my favorite thing about the trail as a whole was actually when I was alone.
Yeah.
And it's quiet. Of course, I had just spent 3 years of my life being screamed at because my shoes weren't polished right or what have you. So, like, being just, like, able to just be the hell alone. But the areas, it's interesting. That whole Green Mountains area of Vermont, all the way through Vermont, is beautiful. There's a spot... And it's so easy to walk right past. It's called the White Rocks, I think. And it's north of like Bromley Ski Area on the trail. And you take this little side Blue Blaze Trail down, and then it's just a sheer cliff of white rocks.
Oh, wow. I definitely didn't go there.
And you walked right past it. You walked, you walk 75 feet away from it.
Yeah, I remember the Bromley ski area for sure.
If it's north of there a bit, I don't remember how far, but you, like, the only reason I knew it was there is, like I said, I drove first. I went up to the Green Mountains and the White Mountains, and I went home, and I was like, I'm going to move to Texas, and I'm like, the hell with it. I'm going to walk all the way back to where I was and do this thing that I always wanted to do. And so I knew it was there, so I made, because I'd been there and kind of talked to people in town, and it's just amazing. I've got a picture where I'm hanging. It looks like I climbed it, you know. It looks like I'm hanging by one arm from it. And
that's awesome.
I went over the top and hung, right? So,
yeah.
But that was like one of those places that you just, if you didn't know, you'd never know, you know.
Yeah.
And then, but I'll tell you the truth is the place I liked the best, maybe because it's where I was finishing, was the White Mountains.
Yeah.
They were so beautiful.
They are. They are. Beautiful. I mean, amazingly. And I guess you went up Washington?
Yeah, that was that was the end for me.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great place to summit.
That's what I figured.
That's awesome.
In the, you know, east of the Mississippi River, and
yeah.
I'm going to do that, and that's going to be, I'm going to walk down to North Conway and have a good lunch and find a hotel and call my dad and say, dude, come get me, I'm done.
Yeah. How was the weather the day you were up there?
It was pretty nice. It was a little socked in, and you know, but it cleared a bit so you could get the views, and it's cold up there, period,
yeah.
You know. And so then I went into town, I got cleaned up and all. I put this picture that I was like, I'd done all this hiking, and I'm like, you should do some stuff, because there's like in Conway there's all like tourist shit, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'll go up on Cannon Mountain because maybe it won't be socked in, you know. And they have the tram, so I'm like, the hell with this walking thing? I'm done now, right? So
yeah.
Get on that ski tram, and I go to the top of Cannon Mountain, and it's like crystal clear.
Oh.
And I got this picture, I swear to God, I get up to the top of the thing, and just as I get there, like, boom, it socks in.
Yes, that happens. You know,
and
it's
I'm
so
like,
crazy.
So I sat there for like 45 minutes, and I went, screw it, I'm going down. I go down, and it cleared.
Oh, yes. And that's it changes so quickly, the weather and the
mountains. It was fun, though. I mean, it's like, so it's nothing's guaranteed. And I guess another thing I'll always miss is the old man, right, because he fell off. I guess he was gone by the time you did this. The old man in New Hampshire.
I remember somebody talking. There was a guy that I hiked with for a little while, and he talked about that. And he's from New Hampshire. So, yeah, he was talking about that. But, yeah, it was gone.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even, that's like generation gap, man, but it sounds like the core is the same. It's this reboot, right? It's this.
Yes, and it was so funny because in one of the podcasts I was listening to while I was walking, you're like, just take a walk, and I was listening to it on a speaker out loud because I was hiking with like three other people that day, and I'm like, y'all got to check out this podcast, you know, so I was playing it. And you were like, you know, just take a walk and like look at a tree, you know, and just like notice things about the tree, and I was like, we've seen a lot of trees lately.
It's like, huh, this guy's saying take a walk. I'm taking a freaking walk.
Yeah, we're taking a walk.
You take
all right.
A walk, jerk. You're sitting on your ass right now in an air-conditioned room.
No, but it was funny. And it's so true, you know. I mean, but even out there, you get to where you start, like, staring at the ground, you know, and you have to, like, tell yourself, like, no, enjoy it. Like, look up, you know, and even when it rains, you know, what is nice about this while it's raining? And one of the things I liked, the little red efts, like those little red lizards, they would come out when it rained, and you didn't really see them otherwise. So, you know, it was like you had to, even in the most miserable of situations, you had to just, like, pick something to be happy about, you know?
Yeah, there's two kinds of rain. There's the nice, gentle, cooling rain, and then there's the wet rain that makes your clothes stick to you and your shorts chafe your legs, and you gotta, you know.
You smell like mildew, and... Now, were you
so
hiking?
Close. It's time for you to go out and smell like mildew, too. But seriously, on that note, like, I do think the younger you are, the easier it is.
Yeah. I mean...
Maybe it's not so much that the less advanced you are in... what we call real life, as far as when you start having kids and you have a mortgage payment, and that's when it really, I think, gets hard. I think it's less an age thing and more like how cemented are you?
Well, yeah, I was going to say the trapped factor, you know. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely does, you know, make it difficult. But, I mean, you can do it in section hikes, you know, and that's the thing. People just are so quick to, like, brush it off, like, oh, I'll never be able to do that. But do a section hike. You know, if that's your thing, the AT is something you want to do, start doing it in sections. And when you retire, you can finish it, you know, if you're in a place where you're like, I can't quit my job and leave my kids and wife and whatever. But to me, completing the Appalachian Trail, section hiking is a lot more challenging than through hiking because, you know, it's the commitment there, the logistics of getting to and from the trail, but, you know, the fact that you never get your trail legs really, and all of that, but I mean, do it. Like, don't not do something, you know, and just say, oh, well, I can't through hike it, so I'm not going to do it. You know, go out and do sections. Take your kids, you know.
Go hike any really great trail for a week.
Yeah.
You know, instead of taking a vacation and going to Disneyland and getting ripped off by a mouse.
Yeah.
Right?
And come back with some crappy souvenirs.
You know? Yeah. You know, then, you know, take a week in the wilderness. And there's a lot of great sections of that trail and other trails that you can do that on that are kind of like promoted as the perfect place for that, you know, 1 week or 5 day type experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I don't know if you ever, I didn't, so it might actually be beneficial to people to do that first, to get some experience instead of just being like, okay, out now.
That might be the best way, you know, actually like practice with your gear.
Yeah.
Because I was
well, I'll be in town Thursday. It's Thursday. I'm nowhere near that town I thought I was near.
Yeah,
my food's running low.
Yeah.
I mean, rat trap for that squirrel.
Or like sitting down to dinner the first night, you know, at Springer Mountain, I was like, now how do I use this stove?
Wow.
How am I going to cook my food? But I don't know, you know, I had faith that I would figure it out. But I would not recommend that. That's the hard way. You know, I'd recommend practicing a little bit and being close to home where somebody can come get you. And if you decide it's not for you, you're not, you know, invested all this money in up there on the Appalachian.
It's not like ringing out at SEAL school or something. You're not, you know, it's not held against you by anybody.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody would even know.
No.
You know, so give it a shot. I mean, that's most things in life. Nobody remembers what you didn't do. They remember what you did. So just keep trying until you find something that doing is worth doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was my test, you know, because you have a lot of bad days out there. I mean, everyone's like, oh, you're on the 6-month camping trip. That's cool. And it's like,
no,
it's not quite like that. But, you know, you have bad days. And one of the things that I told myself, I was like, I'm not going to quit on a bad day. And with anything, I think it's like that. Like, you don't have a crappy day and say, that's it, I'm done. You know, I decided if I'm sitting on the most beautiful summit, you know, looking at the sunshine and the mountains and there are birds singing and butterflies fluttering and I say, this sucks, then I'm ready to quit. It's time to go home, you know. But otherwise, you know, if I'm in a rainstorm, I'm not allowed to quit at that point. So.
Well, man, I've enjoyed, this is like a memory fest for me, so I've enjoyed having you on, Jessica. You want to tell folks how they can learn more about you? You've got a blog, you've got a YouTube channel, et cetera.
Yeah, so my blog is homemadewanderlust.com. And then I've got, you know, documentation of my through hike on YouTube, which if you just go to YouTube and type in homemade wanderlust, it'll pop up. And I also have video links like on the blog. I just came out with an ebook. It's actually came out today. It's on Amazon and it's just kind of how to prepare for hiking the Appalachian Trail because there's just, like I said, such a sea of information. So it's a kind of condensing all of that information and putting it in one spot. And I've done some tutorial stuff also on the vlog, you know, some videos on like picking a pack or, you know, how to make a backpacking stove out of a tuna can or, you know, things like that.
Anybody show up from whiteblaze.net and tell you're stupid for picking the wrong water filter?
Yeah, well, I had two different kinds, so at least I now have, you know, two different options, those folks on my side. But, yeah, that's pretty much it. You can
find
me there.
What would the internet be without trolls?
I mean, I don't know. Story. You know, it keeps it mixed up. It makes things interesting. So,
well, I'll make sure I have links to all of that stuff in your in the show notes for today's episode. I really appreciate you filling out a form and getting on the air with us.
Yeah,
I think this was great for people to hear, and I think there's a lot of people out there that could benefit. And I think you'd agree if you can't do something like this, anybody can do a day hike. You
know,
through day hike, you know, a 10 mile, or challenge yourself and do a weekend overnighter or something and just get the hell out of things for a while so that you can actually figure out who you are.
Turn off the TV, get off the couch, go outside, enjoy nature a little bit, you know, take your kids, like just reboot, a nature reboot.
Very cool. Again, Jessica, I appreciate being with us today on the Survival Podcast.
Yes, thank you so much.
You know, it's great when you're doing your job, you're doing what you do for a living, you have fun. That interview was fun. It definitely takes me back to when I was 21 years old and struck out on my own adventure. And I think it's awesome that she did something that, honestly, I never even really thought about through hiking it. I just had this section that I wanted to do before I came here to Texas, and kind of makes me want to go back and do that. And I really encourage you folks that are not tied yet into your business that you're running, or you're not tied yet into your career, or you're done with your career and you want a new one and you have a pause in the middle and you don't have kids to take care of and things like that. If you want to do something like this or anything that requires like a time commitment, now is the time. There was an old saying that went along the lines of, now is always becoming now, but will never be more now than it is right now. Something to that effect. And the message in that is, it will always be the best time to do something, but it will never be as good a time to do as it is this moment in many instances. Now, if you have a good job and you have a family depending on you and you have a mortgage payment, don't just go quit your job and buy a teardrop trailer or a hike the trail or whatever it is. But if you can make it work now, take the opportunity, because there will become another now. I don't mean to be so repetitive here, but there will become another now where you look at it and go, I really can't do it. It really is irresponsible now. And so those young folks out there that listen to this show, man, if she can do it, you can do it. And you can say, well, you know, she had a good job and all, but she walked away from it. She walked away from it. And is just trying to figure out what she wants to do with her life now. That's awesome. Anyway, you know, it took me a long time to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And what I want to do with my life is spend the rest of it teaching folks, just like you guys that tune in every day on the show. Bring you great guests, bring you great ideas, bring you great education, help you learn as much as you can about as much as you can learn about. And the way I'm able to do that is through your support with the Survival Podcast Member Support Brigade. If you've thought about joining the Member Support Brigade before, but you're like, I don't know. Hey, look, you know you can join for $5. $5 a month. If you don't like it, cancel on PayPal. Or, you know, go ahead and join for a year. You get a discount if you do that way because it's $50 a year. And sign up. And then, you know, if you're looking for stuff to go hiking with, we have discounts on stuff like that. If you're looking for long-term food storage stuff, we have discounts on stuff like that. If you're looking for stuff for your gardening, your planting, your seeds, your plants, we have discounts on stuff like that, and they'll pay you back. All you got to do is go to survivalpodcast.com and click on members to learn more and sign up there. And if you're military, law enforcement, or Peace Corps, active duty or prior service, and also the same thing with first responders, any of those things, you do qualify for a discount. Just email me with TSPC service discount in the subject line before, not after you join. Again, before, not after you join, and I'll send you a discount code to save money on an already great product. We do a discount of about 25% for you guys that have served in any of those capacities. Next up, the other way you can support us, and the easiest way, that, and there's just no reason not to if you like the show, is to go to tspaz.com. Anytime you're thinking about shopping on Amazon.com, tspaz.com will take you to a page on the Amazon website, on our website. And when you get there, you'll see a link that says, click here to ship for any and all things on Amazon. And if you want to buy whatever it is that day, I don't care what it is, just click that link, go do it. It doesn't cost you nothing, and you support our show. I mean, that's really a great way. That really keeps us going here, guys. It's been a great business unit for us. I wish I would have done it 8 years ago when we started. But it's worked out well, and your support, your continued support helps us. But the other thing is, I always want to, you know, be bringing you products, whether you're buying them or not, that you can learn things with. And today's product is Matisse Gallego sardines and olive oil. Why in the world would that be on the Survival Podcast website? Well, this is the Survival Podcast. So the big reason is, most people in the modern world today do not get enough omega-3 fatty acids, omega-3 fats. We get way too much omega-6, and that's bad, and I won't go into the big health reasons on it, but you've probably heard about omega-3s. And one of the best sources of them is cold water fish, which sardines are. You can also get them in things like mackerel and salmon and tuna, but those are predatory fish. Well, they're high up on the food chain. That means that they're bioaccumulating all the toxins that are in our ocean, like mercury, over time, because the plankton gets a little bit, and then the zooplankton gets a little bit, and then the little sardine gets a little bit, and then the bigger fish gets a little bit, and then the bigger fish gets a little bit, and along comes a tuna, and he's getting all of that uptake accumulation over time. So sardines and small fish like herring and menhaden, they're very low in toxin, even with the problems we do have with our oceans. And yet they're very high in the omega-3s. Now, Matisse, also I have on because of quality. These are the best sardines I've ever eaten. They're not magic sardines, right? You're not going to be like, oh, I hated sardines, and then I tried these, and now I like them. No, they taste like sardines, but they taste like the best sardines you'll ever eat. They're big, plump sardines. There's only three to a can. They're not these little, tiny, mush things. They have good, firm texture to them. They are skin-on and bone-in, and that's the way sardines should be if you are a connoisseur like I am. Packed in olive oil, they taste great. No junk. I mean, the ingredients list is sardines, olive oil, and sea salt. They're caught off the coast of northern Spain and Portugal. Just beautiful place. Wonderful waters where the best sardines come from. And it's a survival podcast, right? You want something that's got a good amount of fat, a good amount of protein, that stores well. How about sardines? The expiration date on the pack that I just got shipped here is 2022. Yep, 2022. Eat what you store and store what you eat, but even if you don't eat a lot of them, a 25-pack, you know, you can, they'll make a long-lasting protein and fat source for you. Again, packed in olive oil, so really great. So that's what's featured on tspaz.com today, but always something different and always looking to teach you something in my write-ups beyond, hey, go buy this, like healthy nutritional fats, something that we have got to protect ourselves from the medical industry with, where they're war on fat. Anyway, with that, let's get into the song of the day today, and I have one for you today that is totally different than anything I've ever played before for a final song on the Survival Podcast. Back when the time we were talking about today with the Appalachian Trail, I really was a young man trying to find myself. I really was. And after I got here to Texas, I hadn't quite really worked it all out yet. And I had a roommate who worked, night shift. So I spent all my time basically as I was trying to find a job. And when I got here, first thing happened was my car broke down and all, trying to figure out what to do. And I would go out to bars and stuff, but occasionally I'd just sit at home and I would listen to music. And sometimes I'd listen to music like I play for you all the time. And then sometimes I'd sit and I'd listen to music that would try to take me back to that time on the trail. And I found a store at the mall called Natural Wonders, and I found music by various people. One is a guy named Hillary Stagg. I think I have played that for you before, the Electric Harp. And then this one is a guy named Tony O'Connor. And this song is called Mountain Forest. And it's going to make today's episode a bit longer than normal, because I think the whole thing is about 11 or 12 minutes long. And the first 2 minutes is nothing but the sound of the forest. It's frogs and birds and crickets and rain and things like that. And then the music slowly comes in. Now, I want to kind of point out, this is not the best music if you're kind of sleepy and tired and listen to me while you're driving at night or something and listen to. You might want to check out now. This is really relaxing stuff. But I thought it would be an interesting thing to close with today, because we were talking about rebooting. You know, rebooting and reconnecting with what it is to really be human. And I believe nature is a great way to do that. So many of you, you know, I say get out and take a walk, but many of you have to wait till the weekends or next week or next month to be able to actually do this. So I thought we'd use a little music to take you there in your mind. And hopefully that will help you with just today's reboot. And with that, this has been Jack Spierko with another edition of the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live that better life if times get tough, or even if they don't.
Thank you.